Hello and welcome to the Well Endowed podcast brought to you by the Edmonton Community Foundation. I'm Elizabeth Bonkink, and today we have a special guest host. Hello, Jane Francis.
Hi there, Elizabeth.
So normally Jane Francis is up in donor services. I'm so glad that you found your way down to us.
Yes, I'm normally in donor services and I'm responsible for preparing acknowledgements and receipts for the donations that come in. And I also provide support to fund management. I'm so glad to step in and host this program with you.
On this month's episode, we find out one way the Red Sky performers are tackling reconciliation. We learn how to recognize gifted young musicians with Alexander Mann. Our tummies take action for food accessibility with Food for Good. We meet Tanya Frankie and Nicole Poirier from the City of Edmonton, and they're going to give us a sneak peek into the many upcoming events the city is planning for the sesquicentennial.
Red Sky is a contemporary Indigenous performance company that focuses on dance, theatre, music, and media. Their production, Mr. Tim, is a story of the taming of a wild horse and the friendship formed between Speck and Calvin. The story is designed to bring the conversation around reconciliation to children.
I was at Ekota School where Red Sky had just finished a performance. The kids were very interested in finding out more about the performers themselves and the ideas behind the story. I sat down with one of the performers to talk about why sharing the story with children is so important. You'll be hearing some noise in the background as the team takes down the set. So I'm here with Samantha Brown, who's part of the Red Sky Performance, a project that was funded by Edmonton Community Foundation to bring stories of reconciliation to Canada's 150th celebrations this year. Can you tell us a little bit about the project?
Mr. Tim has been in the works for 3 years. It was first thought up by Sandra Laurent, who is our artistic director. She commissioned Aaron Shields to write the play. And after some workshopping and Tyrone Tatutsi also coming in and translating the Cree language, they decided to put it on the road for children, and now it's been touring for the full 3 years.
So tell us some of the things that happened in the performance that helps explain what we need reconciliation for.
Absolutely. The tellings of what happened in residential school and also tellings of how Speck's family is, so her mother left because of harsh punishments in these schools, and her grandmother is sad a lot of the time, so probably has some depression issues surrounding this as well, and also having to care for her grandchild is another heavy load to bear. So we talk about the family dynamic after residential schools, and also we talk about the stories that Speck knows. So from her family, the reason why we need reconciliation for this is we need to tell the stories in order for these things not to happen again. It's not a distant memory. It didn't happen so long ago. The last school that closed was in 1996. I very well could have went to residential school had there been one in my neighborhood. And it almost seems like it's Canada's distant history, and it's not. That's why we need the reconciliation. That's why we need to talk about it so we know the facts. We know when the timeline was so that this doesn't happen again, because it's not so distant, and it could happen again if we don't talk about these things.
So it's not a distant history, but it's in many ways a hidden history from many Canadians. What's your personal connection here?
So the reason why I jumped on to this project was because of the truth, because it was so within me to tell stories. It's so within me to teach. I jumped on board because the story was so beautiful, and the fact that it's geared towards a younger audience, that is our future. These young kids are so eager to learn. These kids are so open, and they ask all of these questions because they desperately want to know what actually happened. And hiding these kinds of things from Canadians, it puts a rift in what is the truth and what actually goes on. And we can't just go on believing that these kinds of things didn't happen. In order to become a more united Canada, we have to admit in our faults and then move past it, which is what we are doing. We're moving past it, and we're starting to get a more united front
This project is designed for children. Do you think that it's really important for them to understand everything that's going on? Do you believe that maybe our futures in getting the information out to them and making it right in their minds?
I think that that's one aspect of it, absolutely. Because I don't think that some people allow children the credit that they deserve. Children are very, very aware of their surroundings. They pick up on energies. They pick up on any kind of teaching. They're like little sponges and they absorb everything that's going on, and they're going to take that into their adult life. So by telling these stories at a young age, we're only fostering more advanced adults, and we're only advancing our society by teaching these children at a young age and giving them the credit that they deserve. Like, they do have analytical thought, they do reflect, they do think about all of these things that happen.
So I wanted to ask you a little bit about the kinds of questions that you're receiving from kids. Can you give us some examples of things that may have surprised you or may have made you happy to hear?
So we get everything from what is your favorite food to like actual questions about the show. I think one of the ones that stuck with me the most, it actually happened today. One little girl asked, why were they so brutal to these children and why was it allowed? For them to pick up on the cruelty and for them to pick up on those things is why we're doing the show, right? And then we get to answer all of their questions and hopefully give some kind of answer so that they have empathy and compassion and can carry that into their adult life as well.
I want to thank you very much for your time with us today and giving us a little insight into what's happening. And I think this is a really great project for helping our youth understand a little bit more about our reconciliation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to Samantha Brown for taking time to speak with us. If you'd like to find out more about Mista Tim, you can check out their website at redskyperformance.com. And we'll have that link on our website. Alexandra Munn has been dedicated to Alberta's musical community for over 60 years. Just to highlight a few of her accomplishments, she's a member of Edmonton's Cultural Hall of Fame and has been influential with the symphony and several choirs. And she continues to teach at the Alberta College of Conservatory Music at Grant MacEwan University.
She was also a member of the Winspear Foundation as a grants panel member for many years. In appreciation of her service, the Winspear Foundation established the Alexandra Munn Scholarship Fund. Lisa Pruden had the privilege of speaking with Alexandra to learn more.
My name is Alexandra Munn. I have been in Edmonton since 1862 when I was invited to the University of Alberta, then Music Division by Richard Eaton.
Thank you very much for joining us today on the Well Endowed podcast. We were hoping that you could tell us a little bit about the Alexandra Munn Fund.
This is an extraordinary gift in my name. Totally, totally unexpected, and I'm quite sure undeserved. I served at the invitation of the late Francis Winspear on the Winspear Foundation for many years. Francis wanted various persons from all aspects of the community on this board, on the foundation. So I was representing the music aspect. So I served on that until the foundation was dissolved. The executive of the day, led at the time by Roger Smith, who had been dean of business at U of A, decided that there were three areas to which they wanted to donate $50,000 to be invested. And each of those $50,000 would be in the name of a member of the board who represented the area they were interested in. So there was
Carol Gilfillan,
an extraordinary person who dealt with social welfare cases. $50,000 was given in her name for that purpose. And then the devoted secretary,
Judith Peglow.
So the $50,000 was given to her. Hers was to be used at her request by her family. And then I was given, well, my name, $50,000 for music. And each of us could make the parameters for how that money would be distributed, i.e. the interest from the principal. It was marvelous of Francis, you know, to have spread that kind of philosophy about the universal aspect of the city of Edmonton and surrounding. I was very much aware that there was a young group who were not able to apply for the Winspear Fund because they were too young. We are able to spend roughly, I think, around $4,000 to $5,000 a year to be able to give scholarships to deserving young people. It's also now been tied to another family scholarship.
Those are the John and Andrea Wallen Awards.
And they very kindly are piggybacking, as it were, the Munn Fund. So that gives us a little extra money. But it's just that there's this marvelous quality that comes in, I'm sure, any city, any town, any village. There's suddenly that very extraordinary young gift that needs money, and it isn't there, which is nonsense.
So you're the chair of the panel that helps decide where to grant this money. What do you love about that role?
Well, just the sheer privilege of being able to give away Francis's money. It's not mine. I might say it couldn't possibly be mine. So, that's a huge privilege. I'm so grateful to the executive for their magnanimity. It's just extraordinary.
The other thing I was curious about, how do you recognize a young prodigy?
It touches your heart. That's the only way. I mean, nowadays there is so much expertise, especially with young people, because they live in technology. So even by the time they're 8 and 9, they're completely comfortable with computers and iPods and all that stuff, none of which I can even spell, let alone overcome. And suddenly you'll hear somebody play who has all the technical equipment, even at a very young age, happy playing Chopin etudes and standing on their heads and all that kind of thing. But it doesn't say anything. And every now and then, I have to say, God presents this extraordinary young gift who just has it all. And it's rare, of course, but it's to be encouraged.
Of all the young people that you've granted to, do any stand out in your memory that you'd like to share a story about?
Well, this yet hasn't happened, because this is relatively new, believe it or not. But now, for example, there is somebody like this incredible young protege, Jacques Forestier, violinist, age 12, over the hill, and will no doubt become a major international concert performer. No, there's no question. If the stars fall in line, because of course that's part of it too. There's a little thing called luck and good fortune. But this young man is an absolute prodigy and is already making a major name for himself, certainly here and even nationally, and beginning internationally. So it's happening, but they need financing for summer study right now, for example. Even though we might not be able to give them more than a couple of thousand, that at least pays for a plane fare or something like that, you know? There are others out there, I know, but they haven't come forward yet. So I'm hoping through this initiative that will inspire those young people to come forward.
Well, thank you so much, Alexandra. Is there anything else that you'd like to add before we close?
I think just that I'm encouraging teachers, if they're looking and listening, to keep their eyes out and to not hesitate to encourage these young people.
Thank you very much to Alexandra Munn for sharing your story with us. She's a longtime friend to ECF. The Alexandra M. Munn Scholarships and John and Andrea Wallen Awards are available to young musicians or singers who are between the ages of 11 and 15. You can learn more at ecfoundation.org or visit the site thewellendowedpodcast.com to find the link.
Food for Good is a non-profit that works to address food insecurity and to build community around food accessibility. Their four main areas of focus include growing, cooking, food access, and education and advocacy.
With each area of focus comes special programming designed to bring the community together. Just to highlight a few, Food for Good runs a private yard share program, cooking workshops, a collective kitchen for adults and a special one for kids, and affordable farmers markets.
I sat down with Ashley.
My name is Ashley Thompson. I'm the community food animator with Food for Good.
To hear more about Food for Good.
We're a West End nonprofit in the city working to address food insecurity and build community connections.
So Ashley, your name Food for Good is such an interesting name. Could you tell us what Food for Good is all about, what you do?
We're a nonprofit organization in the West End, and we do many different projects and events focused around food. So we have four main focus areas for our work: growing, cooking, food access, and then education and advocacy. We try to encompass an integrated food system approach, so look at all of the different aspects of the food system and address those in our community.
Wow, that's quite interesting. Would like to know what impact you have had on the community.
Well, we've engaged probably over 3,000 people in the West End in food security work, and that includes about 800 youth in the neighborhoods, whether that's through working with the schools or the Boys and Girls Club, some of the youth groups at some of the churches that are in our area, that sort of thing. So I think we've helped to bring the topic of food security and local food and growing your own food and how food can be used as a means of building relationships. We've also made a concerted effort to expand our projects kind of north of 95th Avenue, where the neighborhoods are higher vulnerability. There's a lot of rentals up there. There's a high newcomer and refugee population and a lot of low-income families living in those neighborhoods. And so most of our activities in the past year and a half are concentrated in those areas. And through our own program evaluation and surveying, we have had an impact on household food insecurity. So when people come to our affordable markets or come to our collective kitchens, people do indicate that that lessens their worry about running out of food each month or has built their social capital because they are meeting people in their neighborhood and don't feel so isolated, or they can take home a healthy dinner for the week, for their family, that sort of thing. So it's a difficult thing to measure, but in the small ways we've found to try and evaluate that, we have been seeing really positive results.
So what are the kind of demands that you have from people who would like to join the initiative?
I think at the moment, our main demand is just to have more activities and expand the participation, which, you know, we are a small organization, so our capacity is somewhat limited. So our collective kitchens are always full. We're seeing almost 200 people come through the door for our farmers markets that we have. So I think if we were to have more regular programs, people would be really excited about that. We don't have our own physical space at the moment, so we use the assets that are in the community. We use community leagues, we use church kitchens, we use the space of our partner organizations. So that is also maybe a limiting factor for the amount of programming and events that we can run. But our new vision for the next 3 years is to find our own permanent community space where we can have some kind of food center that the community can come to and know that something is happening around food all the time.
Very interesting indeed. What about sustainability? Do you have like long-term plans for sustainability, sustaining this initiative?
We've entered the last year of our funding through the Edmonton Community Foundation. So come September 2017, we're kind of in a new era of Food for Good. So our board is looking for some different funding sources, and our kind of parent organization, the Jasper Place Wellness Center, is very skilled at social enterprise. So everyone's hired at a living wage from the neighborhoods. So it's a great way to sustain the organization, but to also involve the community and create employment. And with building, hopefully building a food center sometime in the next couple of years, we hope that there's a way to kind of expand the donor base and a way to apply for some grants.
Do you have anything else you'd like to leave for our listeners?
As an organization, we are based in the West End just because of where we've come from and the beginnings of the West End Food Hub Alliance, that it was meant to be a neighborhood-level initiative. But we would love to serve as a model for other areas of the city to kind of replicate this type of project. And there's definitely other areas. I wish all areas of the city had their own food hub and food organization. So if there are any communities or organizations that are interested in some support or some guidance maybe on getting some food activities started with your community members, please contact us. And we would love to support that and have Edmonton be a city of many little food hubs.
Thank you so much, Ashley, for accepting our invitation to talk to us for this program. And we do wish you every success.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again to Ashley Thompson for telling us about the amazing work Food for Good is doing. If you'd like to find out more or are interested in starting a similar project in your community, be sure to connect with them through their website or on Facebook. That is Food, the number 4, Good. We'll have the link on thewellendowedpodcast.com.
There is so much happening for Canada's 150. Here and on previous episodes, we've shared individual projects that the Edmonton Community Foundation has been a part of, either through funding or collaboration. But the City of Edmonton is also organizing a number of projects to celebrate the sesquicentennial.
I went down to City Hall to meet with Tanya.
Hi, I'm Tanya Frankie with Civic Events and Partnerships.
And Nicole.
I'm Nicole Poirier. I'm also with Civic Events and Partnerships.
With our sesquicentennial, we have lots of great things happening around the city. I know the Edmonton Community Foundation has provided a number of grants to different organizations, but you guys also have some things planned specifically for the citizens of Edmonton. Would you like to speak to a little bit of the activities that are going on?
Sure, maybe I'll talk high level and then Tanya can get into some of the details. So really, this is going to be a great opportunity for Canadians to get involved in their communities. And that's really the approach that Edmonton is taking. We will be doing some really great big events. However, this is really about the Edmonton way. It's about all of those smaller communities that are out there getting the opportunity to celebrate Canada in the way that is most meaningful for them. We also have a number of the festivals that are huge. This year, we're asking them to look inside to see how can they celebrate Canada 150 in a meaningful way by adding a component or enhancing their existing festival to help Edmontonians celebrate what is so great about Canada.
And then on to what the City of Edmonton is doing directly. So we're actually working closely with the Legislature of Alberta this year to host a big Canada Day celebration. So that's one of the activities going on this year. And we're looking at enhanced programming, multicultural programming, and really building on the four pillars of Canada 150 that the federal government has identified as their pillar. So that's inclusiveness and diversity, the environment, youth, and reconciliation. So we're really theming our Canada Day celebrations around that. As Nicole's already shared, lots of other activities going on throughout the city, community level and community based. We encourage everybody that has anything that they're doing that's related to Canada 150 and they want to share that information out to go to the makesomethingedmonton.ca webpage, and they have an events calendar there that anybody can upload their information and share what they're doing so that you can find out what's going on in your neighborhood, or you can upload the events that you're planning and go and share it with everybody else so they can come to your event and activity.
So with the other things that our community levels are doing, and you're encouraging festivals and things to reach out and do something a little bit deeper this time, how is that making the celebrations more inclusive and more accessible to people?
So you look at the Flying Canoe Festival, it was absolutely fabulous. Really, the Indigenous culture that was down there, people out and walking through Mill Creek, getting a sense of what the Métis culture was, getting a sense of our voyageurs. It's really, really fabulous that all of these festivals that already exist are looking at ways to really embrace Canada 150. Something that's really exciting for this year is the Fort Edmonton Canoe Brigade. So it's coming June 29th to July 3rd. It's going to happen over the Canada Day weekend. And participants are going to be moving from Devon to Edmonton through Fort Saskatchewan and looking at the old historical sites of Fort Edmonton and the Victoria settlement. So really, when you look at that, the voyageurs were a really big part of our Edmonton history. So what a fabulous festival that's coming.
Also, our Well-Endowed podcast will be joining everyone at the brigade, so we'll have a further coverage on it coming up in the future.
So one of the other things that I think is really important for Edmonton to highlight for Canada 150 is Habitat for Humanity is building one of Canada's biggest build projects ever in 2017. It'll be July 9th to 14th. They're building 150 homes across Canada. 75 homes in Edmonton and Fort Saskatchewan will be built. And so that's really exciting for us. Jimmy and Roslyn Carter, it's their work project and they will be here. And so Edmonton is really excited to support that event. It's not specifically Canada 150, but really looking forward to the next 150 years. Those homes are really critical and really important to Edmontonians.
And actually, Edmonton's Habitat for Humanity is Canada's largest and quite active in our country. So this is an excellent opportunity to show off Edmonton one more time. So there is a project that I'm aware of that gets Edmontonians involved. And I believe that's a mosaic as well, right? So can you tell us a little bit about that and how people can get involved with that?
Absolutely. So there's the Canadian Mural Mosaic. So we have two big murals that we're asking Edmontonians to come help color and decorate and paint a tile. So we started it on New Year's Eve to be able to come down and paint a tile. And then other dates are going to be announced the next couple of months. And all the tiles will be painted by the end of April, and with the hopes to unveil it in the summer this year for our legacy project as part of Edmonton's legacy project.
Is there anything else that you really want to highlight?
I think for anyone who's really looking to find out what else is going on in Edmonton, how you can get involved, how you can apply for a sponsorship, if you go to the city's website, www.edmonton.ca, you will be able to find all of the information on one spot on our website about Canada 150. It will have links to other activities and things that are going on in the city. So we really encourage every Edmontonian, in whatever way, shape, or form that is to them, to get out and do something for Canada 150.
Thanks very much to Tanya Frankie and Nicole Poirier for being with us and for telling us a bit more about what the city is doing to celebrate Canada's 150. Of course, all the links can be found on our website at wellendowedpodcast.com. We will have the city's website as well as Make Something Edmonton, so you can check out all the upcoming events.
We are nearing the end of our show, which means
news time.
Let's begin with some funding application deadlines. There are quite a few, so keep your ears out for any that may apply to you or someone you know. Earlier in the episode, we heard about the Alexandra M. Moon Scholarship and John and Andrea Wallin Awards. These awards help musicians between the ages of 11 and 15 continue their development. The deadline to apply for these awards is May 15th. Also due on May 15th are the awards for students experiencing financial needs. These awards are for students pursuing a program of study leading to a certification, diploma, license, or degree. Be sure to visit the ECF website for more details.
Edmonton Refugee and Emerging Communities Award is due on May 15th. These awards help reduce barriers for immigrants and refugees. Please go to ecfoundation.org for details on who can apply. Application for the Nancy Fairley Scholarship is due on May 31st. This scholarship is for Edmonton Public or Catholic students enrolled in an IB program in their final year. Lastly, we have the Dawn and Noreen Lowry Awards for Women of Excellence. These awards are for women of all ages who are pursuing studies in fields of water, power, finance, energy, accounting, healthcare safety, and/or community relations. We'll have the links for each of these awards on our website. There are also some exciting events coming up.
That's right, Elizabeth. The Edmonton Shift Lab has been working hard over the past few months to design prototypes to address racism and poverty in regards to housing. They will be unveiling the first of these prototypes at their next community campfire on April 18th from 4:30 to 6:30 here at the Edmonton Community Foundation. If you'd like to attend and offer your ideas, check out our website to RSVP for this free event. The Northern Lands Festival is a Canadian wine and culinary adventure. It will be taking place on May 2nd and 3rd, and half of the proceeds will go to the Grateful Palate Fund. You might remember that fund from our interview with Gavinda Bhatia earlier this year.
That brings us to the end of our show. What did you think, Jane Francis?
This is great. I have enjoyed myself and would like to be your guest again.
Absolutely. We'll see if we can get Andrew out of the picture for a while, and maybe you can come back and host with me again. That'd be a lot of fun. So thank you to our audience for listening to this episode of the Well Endowed Podcast, and thanks to each of our guests for sharing their time with us. We hope you enjoyed it, and if you did, please be sure to share, subscribe, and do all those nice things to help us grow.
And remember to stop by our website for the links to each of our guests. That's thewellendowedpodcast.com. We've been your hosts, Jen Francis Asaba
and Elizabeth Bonking. Until next time. The Well Endowed Podcast is produced by Edmonton Community Foundation
and edited by Lisa Pruden.
You can visit our website at wellendowedpodcast.com.
Subscribe to us on iTunes.
And follow us on Twitter at @TheECF.
Our theme music was created by Octavo Productions.
Check them out at octavoproductions.com.
And as always, don't forget to visit Edmonton Community Foundation at ecfoundation.org. Well endowed.